9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. We have ignition. We have liftoff. Out and about is a go. All systems are nominal.
Well, good afternoon, out and abouters, on this election afternoon. Very exciting times that we live in. You are listening to KYRS Medical Lake Spokane, 88.1 and 92.3 FM, also streaming from KYRS.org. And you know, today I'm so excited because I have a couple of people in the studio with me today who actually, they're going to have their own show pretty soon. So we're going to be hanging out a little bit this week. And I've got Luke Baumgarten and I've got Aaron Sellers here on the microphones with me. Hi, guys.
Hey, how's it going?
Hey, Maeve.
It's good to see you guys. And we're going to find out your about Range Media. I'm going to ask a lot of questions about Range Media. But before we get started, how are you guys feeling about this election right now? Are you stoked? Or
I don't think I can legally answer that question.
I mean, are you feeling excited? Are you feeling happy? Oh, okay, you can't. We have to push the dump button.
No, I'm tired. It's just covering an election cycle as a journalist is a lot of work. We're a small team of like 3.5 is what we say. And man, it's a lot.
Yeah, we've written so much, and I also just like can't help but look back at it and feel like we didn't do enough. Like, there's this judge race that I wish I would have had time to cover, yeah. And there's all these other stories that I wish I would have had time to write to make sure voters were the most informed that they could be about local politics, but I can't get to everything, so yeah. Just stressed and tired.
I just think there's a point where you say that's you've done all you could do. We did that Running for My Life video thing. It took me about 50 hours to put that together. And I was like, you know what? I've sent money to my candidate. I've done this video. I feel pretty good. That's yeah. I'm done. It's up to other people at this point. But you know, you brought up, so let's talk a little bit about Range Media.
Sure.
What is Range Media?
Wow. It's kind of an evolving thing. I think Range is a newsroom that's dedicated above all to empowering voices that aren't traditionally heard in, traditional media. So both sort of reporting by and for community perspectives that aren't heard. And hopefully over time, we hope to be the most diverse newsroom in Spokane as we grow, so that also people who, you know, may or may not have had a historic connection to journalism and the kind of information we all need to make informed decisions and hold our leaders accountable will see themselves reflected in at least some of our staff members.
Okay, cool.
Some of the other technical stuff I like to put in the spiel when I'm trying to tell people who we are is that we're worker-owned. So we own our own media. There's no publisher, no like big scary funder hanging out in the back room like telling us what we can and can't publish. Up until recently, we had no advertisements on our website either.
But I noticed you did have one on there.
We are now rolling out ads with groups that are have similar values to us. We're also independent. So again, there's no one controlling our editorial decisions besides us.
Okay.
And hyper-local. So while, yes, we're going to be like talking about the national election, our primary focus is on Spokane voters, the Spokane community, and trying to give everyone in our region the tools and the power to engage with local politics.
And Luke, I know you have a background in journalism with the Inlander.
Yep.
Aaron, have you done journalism stuff before this?
I wrote for my school paper in college. I like to say that I started journalism when I was 12 years old because I illegally got a job at my local library and I was running their little summer reading program, and I had to write little write-ups on how each of the weekly summer reading programs went and send them into the like local paper. So yes, I'm very experienced, maybe more so than Luke even.
You know, it's funny when you're talking about that, how you see these kind of repeating patterns in your life. I remember when I was in high school, I was the editor of the Star Trek Club newspaper.
yes, of course.
And then I wound up being, you know, the school newspaper, and then later on the union newsletter, and you know, yeah. So I just think these things, they do kind of tend to, I guess, you know, you are who you are from an early age in a lot of this.
Yes, for sure.
Yeah.
And, you know, I have to say, I really enjoy both of your writings, both of you guys. I mean, and I know how hard it is to write. I mean, to make something, like, I looked after you said, oh, I looked at your Facebook post, and I thought, oh, I should go look at my Facebook post, and it was all screwed up. I had, like, copied and pasted and left stuff in there. I thought, oh, this is good. So, but, you know, it is, to make it understandable and fun to read and informative, I mean, you were talking about writing these articles. How many hours a week do you figure you spend writing?
Oh, well, do you mean physically writing, or do you mean everything that goes into writing?
Well, I know you have to do a lot of research. Let's just talk physically writing, because I know you have to go out and research and interview and do all those things too.
Yeah, probably 10 hours a week actually writing.
Oh, okay.
And a lot more hours a week reading agendas, calling people, fact-checking things, going through other articles on something. Like, I really try to make sure I know something inside and out before I even put pen to paper or fingers to keyboard.
I don't spend that much time writing at all unless it's grants and stuff. So I kind of fill the editor-publisher role right now,
okay.
Although I really want to be doing more writing. And I actually realized I wrote a big piece on the capital gains tax repeal initiative that's on the ballot that I worked on for like a month. And I think
there's a lot of information.
It's very thorough.
It's like riding a bicycle, but also the whole thing about like anytime somebody says it's just like riding a bicycle, it's like, but what's that first, like when you hop back on the bike for the first time, it's a little wobbly. And I was kind of kicking myself for how little time I had to spend on it. But I bet I spent about 10 hours writing that particular story and probably another 10 reporting and researching. So 20 hours total, but it felt like it took a month to actually get together. Yeah.
I you know, and that's the thing, reading that is that it reminded me of, and then seeing how you had a lot of the other election issues laid out there, how if somebody was looking for information, I don't think was even really biased. I mean, it was just basically you laid it out. And one thing I really enjoy about your articles too is that you do have the characters involved. Mm-hmm. You know, there are characters involved in your stories, and you develop those characters a little bit too. And usually they're not villains. Usually there's characters that are rather complex, and I enjoy that.
I do too, and I think, I don't know, Luke, I think that maybe when I got hired, there was some worry that I wouldn't be able to get more complex people to talk to me because I have piercings and tattoos and at the time, like, bright pink mullet.
Can we say who that worry was coming from? Because it wasn't coming from me. I think you were a little worried.
I was a little worried, and to be fair, there were politicians who wouldn't talk to us, but I also think part of our like secret sauce is that like over time I've been able to build trust with these people because no matter how complex they are or whether or not I personally agree or disagree with them, I will never inaccurately represent what they tell me. Mm-hmm. I will never like misrepresent their words. I always offer to read their quotes back to them to make sure that they're still comfortable with what they said. And I think that like building that kind of community trust helps us tell more complex stories, even if it's with people we may or may not disagree with or even like as humans.
Yeah. And it's, you know, I think it wouldn't take long for somebody to look past it got me. I used to do a lot of advertising writing and planning things. And there was a guy running for Stevens County prosecutor. And the guy in there was an incumbent for about 25 years. Mm-hmm. And so this guy sought me out, like they still do with campaigns now, because they say, I have a certain knack for cruelty in the way I write stuff. And so And so this guy sought me out and he goes, I want you to help me unseat this guy. And I'm like, well, you're a Republican. And I don't know if I can really go there. And he goes, well, let's talk and meet. So I meet him at the front door. And this, of course, I was doing work on the side while I was working for the fire department. And I had a really substantial mohawk. And he says, well, if you're going to work on the campaign, I'm going to pay you really well, but you're not going to be showing up for any of this stuff. And I go, well, that's fine with me because I don't want anybody to see me there. And he did win. He did win. Oh, it was a brutal campaign, but it was fun. So how did Range get started?
Well, honestly, to begin with, and I've been trying to figure out how to tell this story because it is a worker-owned cooperative, but it just started with me in my attic at the beginning of the pandemic trying to figure out if there was even a space in journal. Like, could I be a journalist in Spokane and still make ends meet? I didn't leave the Inlander by choice. I left because I couldn't pay my bills after I reached a certain age, bought a house, as is increasingly uncommon for young people to be able to do these days. Like, And then I was the arts editor at the Inlander for about 3 or 4 years and stepped back to just write again. Cause that's my first love is writing. And, when I got the job at the Inlander and, you know, like 24 or 25, I grew up relatively poor in North Spokane County and like halfway between Elk and Chatteroy.
For the real
North Spokane heads.
I went to Riverside.
You went to Riverside? Okay, so I went to Riverside,
too.
I had no clue. Yeah.
I was a Ram.
Yeah, me too. Yeah, so I was a Ram, but I lived about 9 miles off off Highway 2 on the Elk Chatteroy, so kind of east of...
Oh, that's where my wife was from, right out by Blanchard.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So we were just before the Blanchard turnoff. And in places like that, like, I loved writing and reading, but I never knew any professional writers, no professional journalists. And so when I got the gig at the Inlander when I was about 25 or 24, I kind of expressed this surprise to my mom. Like, I can't believe I get to do this writing. Like, it's really cool. I never thought this was a thing for me. And she brought out something from my baby book that was like, before I was even in kindergarten, I had like scrawled what I told her was a report about George Washington. And so I think, to your point about, like, I think we find these things and we know what we want to do and we just try to find a way to, like, make them happen. And so at the same time, I didn't think of journalism as a calling until I'd been doing it for a really long time. And I've done a lot of different things in my life, but that's the closest thing to a calling I've ever had. And I had to leave for economic reasons, not because I wanted to. And so that became a very sort of individual, like, question to myself, like, can I figure out a way to be a journalist again? And the pandemic, for all the horror it brought, kind of also brought this possibility to maybe do that. Like, I didn't have, you know, we weren't really doing anything, we were all locked up, and so decided to just go for it. And pretty quickly it became clear that people liked what we were up to and that there was a need for it. I think right after the pandemic, if folks remember, the beginning of the pandemic was the murder of George Floyd and the unrest in Spokane that followed. And I don't know if you have an opinion on this, Maeve, but that was the most sustained, consistent, well-organized, largest, longest moment of unrest that I can remember as an adult. And when I was seeing our colleagues at other media talk to people, they were... you know, the president of the NAACP at the time and other folks who were sort of the established leaders in the black and brown community, but the folks who were actually organizing these events weren't making it onto the media. They weren't being, their voices, they weren't even anywhere in the frame. And so that pretty quickly became a niche that I thought we could fill, just to talk to those folks and talk about what they're going through. And so it started off as a podcast in my attic, and within about a year, we'd gotten a bunch of local coverage. We'd gotten some national coverage, actually, too, when we decided we hired our first employee besides me in 2022, and that's when we became a worker-owned cooperative, right at the very beginning of having another employee, and we got, like, written up in the Harvard Nieman Review.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that.
Because, you know, there's not a lot of worker-owned anything in America, and we were kind of the first worker-owned news media establishment that, at least new news media. And so yeah, there's just been this really interesting, we're still really small, I'm still writing grants to stay alive, but we've had this really powerful, slow but powerful growth around folks in Spokane kind of becoming members and helping support us that way, and these really awesome foundation partners who will give us money to, you know, keep doing what we're doing while we're trying to get sustainable.
That's so cool. It's interesting model, this, because you can get it, you can go to the website.
Yeah.
And what is the website?
It is rangemedia.co.
It's dot co.
Yeah.
Okay. You can go there and you can subscribe.
Yeah.
And then basically it gets mailed to you. And you're one of the ones I subscribe to, and I've subscribed to a couple others. And those are one of my primary sources of written news. And it's funny because we were all, 4 years ago or so, we were thinking about, mainstream, we need to pay attention more to mainstream media, because mainstream media, they're the gatekeepers and they are the guardians of the truth, and they're vetted because they have journalists and all that. And then, this election to me has really proven how the mainstream media, it doesn't do that job, because there's media and there's journalists. There's journalists and their job is to tell the truth if they're a news journalist, and there's the media, their job is to get you to look at their website, or buy their paper or whatever, to keep you clicking, And I just think that your model, it's a big question. It's like, you're obviously so tapped into news and the way people tell stories. Where do you think this is going to go? I mean, do you think that, as far as like Range, what do you see like Range 5 years from now? What would be the wave? I mean, where is it heading?
Oh man, well we just did like a 10-year strategy session where we had a whiteboard and a bunch of dots and circles, and then filled in circles and open circles about when do we want to start this thing and when do we want to have it totally launched by. It's a tough. I think I've been talking a lot. What do you think, Aaron, to start? And I'll jump in. Like, where do you, just personally, as you're relatively young in your career, I've thought about this stuff. I mean, I thought about Range for like 6 years before I started it. You're now over a year in, and you have some really well-defined passions. So, like, what do you think Spokane needs from Range next?
I've always thought about our media landscape here as needing to be really collaborative just in the 1 year that I've been here. There's not enough journalists in Spokane to cover every bad thing and even every good thing that happens. And I think from when I started, Luke always told us, like, we're not competing with the Inlander. We're not competing with the Spokesman. We're trying to get the stuff that they aren't covering, or the stuff that, like, you know, in a newspaper column, you get a couple square inches that you have to fit your story into.
Yeah.
I don't have that restriction. Luke doesn't have that restriction. So if he wants to dive way in.
I probably need that restriction.
On something, we can give more context. We can give more background. And so I'd really like to see us expand to fill those kind of beats that are gone now. Like a labor reporter and a Spanish desk reporter who can write and interview in Spanish. I would really like to, I know we've talked, this is so technical, but like segmented newsletter lists of, here's your daily politics digest for people who are really interested in politics, and here's your labor newsletter of all of the biggest labor news coming out of Spokane, because we are like a labor city, and there's no, I mean, I don't think the spokesman has a labor desk reporter, the Inlander definitely doesn't.
No.
Education, like, looking at higher ed in our area, because we have like three big colleges, and I think that's an area that gets underreported a lot. So really, I just would love to see us expand, have enough editors, enough writers to take all of these areas that aren't being covered in a deep and meaningful way.
Okay, Maeve, you were the one who said the word model.
Yeah.
So it's a danger of getting even wonkier here, but do you want me to give sort of my theory of what we're trying to do with our model?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Okay. So one of my opinions about why you know, after Craigslist came and sort of destroyed classified ads, and advertising just has struggled for a long time, basically since around the time Aaron Sellers was born, is the beginning of the decline of journalism.
Well, it's all my fault.
Yeah, I'm just saying. I mean, it's not your fault. It's just, you know, these things happen in generations. One of the things that I think has not been adequately, or maybe it's just taken as like gospel, but like when you're primarily advertising, when your primary source of funding is advertising, you can get really, really big if, you know, you can sell ads every week. And, you know, and this, the Inlander is probably the only fiscally solvent weekly paper left in America, as far as I tell. And they're still publishing 60 pages. That's amazing. What you see with things like Vox and BuzzFeed and the really big, like, well-funded advertising efforts, but even something like Crosscut, which is a theoretically statewide, but it's really more of a West Side sort of public radio, public media initiative that they'll, that's largely funded by advertisers and sponsors. You can have this opportunity to, like, you'll see newsrooms growing by having DEI initiatives and like trying to hire more diverse voices. But fundamentally the audience is always kind of, and you might get new audience from that, but if the money goes away, if people stop advertising, then you're going to retrench around like the core of whatever's bringing you the most money, which in the case of a newspaper is like furniture stores and like car dealerships. And so you're always retrenching around a middle class audience, which in a place like Spokane usually means white, usually means relatively suburban, relatively comfortable. And so when you see these like series of like media growth things and then layoffs, it's often the more diverse voices that kind of grow when times are good. And then they're the first to get cut when times are bad. And what we're trying to do with our business model is like public radio. It's like not that much different than KYRS or, you know, NPR. But what we're really trying to actively do, when Sellers was talking about a Spanish language desk, like we'd really like to have bilingual content, and ideally we'd have every story we write would be bilingual. The hope is that we can carve out through membership, like roughly 600 or 700 members gets us a staff person. So if we can find 600 or 700 people in the Latina community who really want this, then that number stays there, then we will never have to worry about laying that person off when times get tough. And same with us. Like, if we can find 500, 600, 700 people who are like, yeah, we want City Hall reporting. We want those long tweet threads that Sellers does every Monday. There's not going to be the sort of economic... What we're trying to do is build a revenue base that's indicative of the audience we're trying to create, so that we don't have to make... It doesn't mean that if times get tough and we lose some members, we all might have to take a pay cut or something, but we won't have to like lay off entire chunks of our workforce. And that's part of why like we want to be a place where, did you know Bill Moreland? He was the investigative reporter the spokesman who did a lot of work with white nationalists and he broke, big time.
I met him during the Otto Zim trial.
He's the guy that broke, Mark Furman was moving up to North Idaho while the OJ Simpson trial was still happening. Cause he basically stalked Mark Furman and like found him in the Spokane International Airport, and Furman, punched out the cameraman, who he brought along. Bill worked that beat for 40 years. He raised a family of like 5 kids and was able to basically spend his entire life getting as knowledgeable as possible about not just, you know, movements on the far right or white nationalism, but those movements in our area, because he didn't have to move around the way most journalists do. And so part of what we're trying to do, the lack of trust people have in journalism, it's different at the national level and the local level, I believe that fervently. Like when people say they hate the media and they're talking about MSNBC or Fox News, they mean something qualitatively different than if they say I hate Range or the spokesman.
Or even individuals.
Even individual writers.
Right. Yeah. I mean, you can go in and have drinks that are named after local news celebrities.
Right. Yeah. Right. And so, but I think part of it is if you don't, hate is one word, but like if you don't see in your paper people who know more than you do when you're on a given topic, especially a topic you know about, like why would you trust that publication? And so part of what we're trying to do here is make it so that if Sellers wants to spend their entire career doing City Hall work in Spokane, we've got a model that will allow them to do that. And they can hopefully buy a house and eventually raise a family if that's what they want to do. And so it makes the sort of startup phase of all this stuff tougher because we're paying better than most people do. And so our team's smaller than it might be. We might be able to have another
half
reporter
or
another half person if we were paying what other media outlets pay. But part of that is like, I think to end my career doing this work. Like,
I would like this to be
my last stop. And so if I'm going to make that my aspiration, then I wouldn't, and this is one of the other reasons for the worker ownership part, is I wouldn't want to do that on the backs of the people I'm working with. Right. Yeah. So I want this to be a news place, whether you love us or hate us. And some people don't like, so we're a hate read for plenty of people, I think.
Sure.
You will never be able to say that we don't know what we're talking about and that we don't hopefully have the connections. You know, when Lisa Brown was elected mayor, I told Sellers, it's your job to become the person who is like Bingle and Cathcart's first call, right? There was a moment where we have this adversarial system of government where when Woodward was our mayor, it was the progressive people in the city council who were always, they were feeding us stories and vice versa. And occasionally, you know, the administration would feed us stories about what was going on at the council. We have a duty of care to the people who read us, who we serve to hold every politician accountable as equally as we possibly can. And so that's what we're trying to do.
Okay. And it sounds like because your income comes from people who do paid subscriptions.
Yeah.
So if you were able to had a bilingual Spanish speaker, right, and they had a journalistic background or wanted to have one, yeah, and they said, oh, I can bring this many people, then they would, was that how it kind of works? Does somebody approach you and say, I have this kind of base of people and I want to, you know, I can bring you this many people? Or
I think that's, we're about to start trying to figure out. I don't know that it's going to be super fair, super useful to, you know, somebody like Sellers could be like, I'm representative of this community and I can, you know, can I have a job here? I think what we're going to try to do is partner with community organizations.
Oh,
and
sure.
Do that kind of like, I've thought about, you know, I owe an email to folks at the Spokane Alliance to be like, okay, we have this aspiration to think about labor reporting. What do the unions think about that? And not to be like we're in the pocket of the unions, but to talk to your membership and be like, hey, if you believe we need, if you believe there's a dearth of labor reporting here, which there most certainly
there
is,
sure,
and
is,
you want to support that, like, let's talk about what it would look like to be able to fund inside the community to do this thing rather than me. So I've been trying to fund the Spanish language desk for almost 2 years now, just writing grant after grant after grant. And we got our first grant for the Spanish language desk, but it's not enough to actually fund the position. So we're going to use it to do more, you know, fundraising. But recently I sort of had this thought that maybe we should be doing all of these things at once, like going out to community,
yeah,
to have these discussions while we're also writing these grants and maybe also talking to, you know, we want to do as little advertising as possible, but if there's, I mean, there are a lot of Mexican restaurants and a lot of Mexican groceries,
yeah,
in Spokane and none of, and there are, you know, there's the La Prensa Bilingüe, which I think is bimonthly, a bimonthly community paper that's in English and Spanish. But other than that, there's not very much, you know, sponsorship or advertising happening that's targeting specifically that community. And so can we sort of cobble together a community resource that comes largely from community wealth?
You know? Yeah, that would be really cool. And do you ever think, Aaron, do you enjoy reading print stuff too? Or where do you like to get your news from?
Oh, I am a little news fiend. I read every news outlet. I check the Spokesman website every morning. And every Wednesday, I read the Inlander. And every Thursday, I check the other local outlets. So like Spokane Public Radio and Investigate West. And usually I'll take a quick look at Cascade PBS too, because it's like statewide. I read almost no national media, but I try to read every piece of local media that comes out, at least like skim headlines, see if there's anything related to my beat, anything related to anybody else's. I do little news hours with my roommates sometimes where I sit them down and tell them about what's going on. I don't know. I just, like when Luke was talking, I grew up in a really small town. I think we've talked about this, like 300 That's people.
Kamiyai out that way, right?
Out that way, yeah. Different town, but like 45 minutes from Kamiyai. And we had like a county-wide newspaper. And I know one of the ways Luke's talked about this model being able to work really well is that like news that comes from these local areas is kind of dying. I think I've seen my town in the news twice in the last 5 years, and it was both when major tragedies happened, like a gas station blew up and a bunch of people died, wow. and like a house burned down with twin boys in it. And those were the only stories from my town that I've ever seen on the news. But if we could figure out how to make some kind of model work where we provide like website development and editorial support, and the community just manages to, you know, 500 people in a town, they all kick in $5 and there's a reporter who lives there who is able to like write and report the stories that matter to that community. That's the kind of work that I'd love to see Range
That's
do
a great
region.
Idea. And politically too, that would news would be out there to their representatives and they would know what's going on. That'd be a great, great resource for them too.
Exactly.
You know, and I do you guys ever read The Onion?
Oh yeah.
So I started getting that in print again.
Oh yeah. Oh. They just started printing. I was actually in Chicago when they
Oh, at the convention they dropped a bunch, right? Yeah. Yeah, so I've been enjoying that because it's fun to leave that. I like leave it laying around. I got away with it a few times, but now Sarah's caught on because it'd be like, you know, and then my grandkids come over and read the articles. You know?
No. So, yeah. You're contributing to misinformation, Maeve.
I know. Well, that's kind of my MO.
It's funny, though. It's funny misinformation.
Yeah. So, but I think, but would there ever be a chance that you would want to do this in print? I mean,
the economics of print are just... And again, I never got to see the like the balance sheet or the profit and loss statement at the Inlander, but I think, you know, at the time I was there, editorial was about 10% of the budget because they're printing a 60-page paper and they have to distribute it. And they've got an entire team of advertising reps, you know, like selling ads, and they've got their design team and stuff. So it like made sense that like we're the exact opposite. We're almost 90%, like almost 90% of our expenses are our people. It's like 85%. And then it's like trivially inexpensive compared to that to like host a website. And so I've thought about it and I think it would be sort of like a community funded initiative. If people were like, do you want us to do something monthly or something quarterly? Or if it were going to be something like weekly, it would require just a lot more, you know, investment and probably a lot more advertising, but it's fascinating. And we've actually talked about like, maybe it's something that's a little bit more evergreen. That's less, like an ephemeral, like, you know, daily or weekly paper. Maybe it's more like a coffee table book on a topic could live for a year or something. Kind of like, you know, maybe like
not the complete history of Camp Hope or
something.
Trench shelter.
Yeah,
but maybe like one of the things that I think makes my reporting different than my fellow City Hall colleagues at the Inlander or the Spokesman is that like I might have a deadline, but it's not firm in the same way that getting something into print is. And so like Luke and I have had conversations before where I'm like, well, you know, we said my story was due today. I have almost every piece I need to write a good story. But like somebody brought up this thing in this interview that was really interesting. And I want to chase that down a road to see if it like makes my story better, uncovers a new piece of information or like a piece of context that wasn't able to be in other stories. And I think not having that like hard deadline that print requires and the hard space requirements that print requires allows us to be a little bit more flexible about making sure that like we're doing all the reporting we need to do and we're telling the best story possible. And of course, we have to be timely. Like if it's a story about a decision that City Council is going to make, like it has to come out before that. But sometimes it is okay to have more time and space to create the best product.
Well, and that's another thing is this, your reporting on City Council. I mean, just the what's on the agenda, what's discussed. I mean, I just think it's a wonderful source. So, and I can ask you this, and you can answer because you're a guest. How much does it cost for somebody to get the newsletter or to look at the website?
Well, the newsletter is free, and we never paywall anything, and we're not going to because part of, you know, again, I grew up pretty poor in the country, and I think one of the reasons my you know, I didn't grow up with a sort of culture of journalism in my home, was that my parents didn't see like the benefit of, you know, reading the paper and like going down and advocating for themselves. And so like, we don't want to be, we believe that like information is a right that citizens in a democracy need to have. And so it's free. And also, if you want to pay for it, it starts at $10 a month, but we also have other tiers, and you can find all those at rangemedia.co.
Perfect. That's perfectly done.
Luke has the spiel down.
We did have a very occasional podcast that I got pretty good at making the pitch.
Well, and then, so let's talk a little bit about your show, too. Now, when is the Range, is it going to be called Range? Is it going to, what's it going to be called?
Free Range.
We're calling it Free Range.
Okay. Oh, good. Okay.
We had a poll. Luke and I couldn't agree on what we wanted to call it, so we put it out into the community via Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and Reddit, and let them pick from our top four.
Yeah, we weren't like fighting over it. I think we were all kind of like, I don't know if any of these are great or which.
The one I'm kind of sad about, like reader on, I want to say Instagram, DM'd us and was like, you should call it Range Against the Machine. And I'm a little sad we didn't go with that. Yeah,
that would have been funny too. So what day is the show on?
Thursdays. Every Thursday from 3 to 4 p.m. starting this Thursday, as in 2 days.
Yeah. Oh, okay. That sounds good. And will you discuss sort of like, will it be a synopsis of what the material was that you had sent out in your newsletter?
Honestly, no, probably not.
Okay.
We're trying to, we're experimenting with a couple of different segments. We want to talk about, like, we do a wide range newsletter every Friday where we pull together like the news you missed from us, from other outlets. I do a little segment I call like the good, the bad, and the embarrassing. So a piece of good news, bad news, and embarrassing
news.
Oh,
cool.
Yeah.
And we're using some of that style as a model for the show, some of the news you missed. But we also want to do really deep conversations with reporters, both from Range and other outlets, about how they got to their stories, how they broke them, some of the stories behind the stories, ask them questions about things that maybe didn't make it into the print versions. What else, Luke?
I mean, I think like generally speaking, it's all going to sort of come to us as we go, but generally a news of the week type thing. Like, here's a roundup. If you didn't, you know, if you were paying attention, hopefully you get something out of it. And if you weren't, like, maybe this is what you need to sort of at least be a little bit caught up on local news. But it'll be Aaron and I all the time. And then hopefully it'll be other colleagues of ours from Range guesting, you know, pretty frequently, hopefully. And then also our colleagues from around, you know, talking about, you know, if Aaron gets scooped by Emery or Eliza at City, and there's a City Hall story that the spokesman of the Inlander broke that we didn't break, and it's really important, like, hopefully we can have them on to discuss their part of the story that week. We also, you know, I just date myself every time I say, you know, kind of like how much technology's changed, you know, since I was doing this work at the Inlander, but like, I've just, the other day I was cleaning out my basement and found my little recorder that I used to record. It was a total pain in the butt to use. It was like this big, and it had like the old fashioned USB-A thing that didn't work half the time. And it was always a pain to record our interviews, but now...
Was that an Olympus one?
It was an Olympus,
I had the same connection.
I'll send you a photo. I bet it's the same one.
Yeah.
Like every reporter in the aughts had this, the same recorder. Now it's like, it's beyond easy to record literally every conversation we have, which we do anyways, pretty much every interview, because it's better for us, and it's better for our sources. If there is when we don't like let people read our stories, we let them check quotes to make sure it was accurate, or that it's not out of context, or there's not extra context they feel like they want to add. But we can have these recordings to go back and be like, no, they can't deny they said it because it's recorded. Also, the audio quality on these things is good enough. It's like it's radio quality. So what we also hope that we're going to be able to do is, if we have a really amazing interview that gets into way more depth in a particular avenue of a story that, you know, Sellers has written, or I've written, or whatever one of our colleagues has written, we can maybe just take the last 20 minutes of that hour and just play that out, you know. And
that'd be cool.
Yeah, so kind of a hybrid of the podcast we used to do with this sort of News of the Week roundup thing.
Well, I am really, really looking forward to it. We're going to do our 40-minute after. We're not doing, for those of you playing at home. No, there was no 20 minute after. I got special permission. And I was told, actually, I didn't have to ever do it. But I didn't, we'll see. I think that changes. So, but we are going to do our 40 minute after the hour stuff because I have to read. Well, I don't have to, but I'm going to read. I have to, and I enjoy reading my PSA and my underwriter. Okay, here's the PSA. The Spokane Folklore Society's 29th Annual Fall Folk Festival is this Saturday, November 9th, and Sunday, November 10th, featuring over 80 performers on six stages at the Spokane Community College Lair, 1810 North Green Street. Information available online at SpokaneFolkFestival.org. Out and About receives support from Boots Bakery and Lounge, specializing in vegan bistro fare and gluten-free baked goods. Located in the Saranac Commons, 19 West Main Street. Open 7 a.m. through 7 p.m. Monday through Saturday, 7 a.m. through 5 p.m. Sundays. Full menu and information at bootsbakery.com. You know, and sometimes I play a little bit of music in here. I kind of pad things out. But, you know, we're having a good conversation. We don't want to waste any time. But I thought I would share with you what I was going to play. I was going to play the theme to Sigmund and the Sea Monsters. Ghost Riders in the Sky by Johnny Cash. H.R. Puffin Stuff theme music. Big Iron by Marty Robbins.
Ooh, I was just listening to Marty Robbins the other week.
I just love, Marty Robbins. Yeah, it's just, I love his voice. And then the theme to Lidsville. I got on a Sid Marty Croft, and I was telling Sarah that. She goes, what music do you have in case your guests don't talk today? And I go, well, it's a Sid Marty Croft Saturday morning festival. And she goes, I don't get the connection. I'm like, I don't really get it either. I thought sometimes when I do these things, it's like there is this connection that's there that I don't see until after I do it, but there's no connection that I can see. So that's what you guys missed. Now, truth versus fair and balanced. How do you do, you know, like one media says, oh, we're fair and balanced, but really, is there a fair and balanced? I mean, is there, how do you bridge that?
We like to say that we are accurate and we are fair, but we are not unbiased and we are not objective.
And that's where, like, largely, we have one actual person with a journalism degree on our team, and it's neither Aaron nor I, and I... unfortunately was a philosophy major. So I
was a theater major. And, so,
but like, you know, one of the things you learn in like your first philosophy class is that objectivity may exist somewhere, but it doesn't exist within the human mind, right? We're all subjects. We all have our biases, whether we admit to them or not. And so this idea of, and honestly, you know, journalism for the longest time, it was called the view from nowhere. The idea that like, if you write for a daily paper, you write for one of the big, you know, the paper of record in your town, you owe it to everybody to basically be a robot, right? And sort of present both sides equally or whatever. And that, I think, is, you know, got us in a situation where, at least at the national level, we have, you know, Fox and MSNBC both claiming to be arbiters of the truth in some objective sense. And when I think the truth is, like, there are a lot of little truths. Everybody has their own truth. Yeah. And it's not moral relativism to say that. And it's not like hippy dippy, you know, whatever, like kumbaya to say that. It's like one of the things that I think makes Seller such a great reporter is that like that you will have really meaningful conversations with people where they will share their truth with you. And then it's a matter of, we try to present that truth, individual people's truths fairly in print. And I think that's the only way you can do it. And I also think it's easier in a local context to do that because everything's less as politicized as Spokane's getting. It's getting more political than it ever was in the first, say, I don't know, 20 years of my sentience as a, you know, an adult. But you can sit down across from somebody rather than it being over Twitter or over Facebook and really break bread. And if you're, I think it's to the great credit of like the majority of our readers and the majority of people, the ones that actually pick up the phone and will engage with us, regardless of how they think, you know, we come across. I think they think we present them fairly. And like, I think they think we present our truth, their truth you know, fairly. Yeah.
Yeah, I think we have these little stickers that say like, "Oh, community is my bias," and it's a little, like Luke said, it's a little hippie, but it's also true. But that doesn't mean, like, when we talk about fairness, right? Like, I did all of this reporting on the rainbow intersection downtown back in June, got doxxed on the internet, got called slurs multiple times for my coverage of it. And, like, for me, fairness wasn't, let me make sure I talk to, like, two people from the city and two queer people and two people who vandalized the mural right. and hate gay people. Like, that's not what balances to me. Balances to me, like, who has the power in this situation? Who does not have the power? And how do I tell this story in a way that doesn't further marginalize anybody? And so, like, when I wrote my story, it was the interviews I did were with queer people who were out there working on the mural. They were with people who, you know, were working really hard to make sure that the mural was able to be funded without using any city dollars.
Yeah.
They weren't with the people who come to city council and yell about it, or the people who are out there vandalizing it or dumping paint. And in order to write a fair story, I don't think I need to talk to those people.
Yeah, you never really hear after a bank robbery the news.
The bank robbers.
Let's talk to the bank robbers. Why, you know, why did you need this money? Yeah, you don't really, that doesn't seem to be the purview of good journalism, I don't think. But yeah, it's, what do you guys think about these newspaper endorsements that, you know, people up in arms about, like the Washington Post and the LA Times? I mean, is that...
On the one hand, I think I understand it. And I think the Washington Post thing that just happened is a... I will say I'm feeling like chiller about this election than I have in a long time. Not because it's not a very serious election, but I've been so busy with local yeah. coverage. I just haven't had that much time to think about this stuff yeah. at the national level. And honestly, we can actually, you know, make a difference and, like, you know, tell stories that people actually read here, where rather than just doom scrolling, which is, you know, I don't think good for anybody's no. soul or spirit. But the Washington Post thing was like, if the Washington Post had made a decision to stop doing endorsements 3 or 4 months ago, I think that's a defensible decision. Spiking an endorsement, regardless of who it was, this would include if Rob Curley would have been able to spike, you know, Stacey Coles's endorsement of Trump.
Yeah, that was last time, right?
Yeah, yeah. In 2020. I would have been against that too. It's like, if you want to do endorsements, do endorsements.
Yeah.
Don't chicken out. Certainly the publisher should not be chickening out and yeah. spiking something if your editorial team endorses the wrong way. I do in general, like as I get older and the more I think about truth and things like, and who, and media as a gatekeeper of information, I'm a little more reluctant to be the one endorsing anybody. Right?
Yeah.
I don't think, and I don't know how you feel about this, Sellers. It's actually a good conversation to be having in live on air, but like, I don't know. As a journalist, I don't think I'm trying to put myself up as like a moral arbiter. I think what we're trying to do is understand things as well as we can, get them on paper and give, let people decide for themselves with an understanding like where we come from, our positionality and our collective human lack of objectivity, being like, we told the story in the fairest way we knew how. You judge if you think it's fair enough for you. I do think though that that's led me to consider some things like, do we do something like a community endorsement process where we go to a bunch of different right. organizations and maybe people and try, and this would be a monstrous amount of work. So I'm not,
well, you don't have an editorial part no, to your, no, right. It's all just straight reporting. No, so
we'll, every once in a while, we'll take a, like an editorial piece, and we have a columnist, but her column is mostly focused on like urbanism and bike routes.
Yeah.
Okay.
So we have like a toe in editorial, but not like a full foot.
Yeah.
I'm like really, really, I mean, I started my career as a blogger on the music side of things, but I also read a bunch of political blogs in, you know, 2000, the John Kerry, George W. Bush election in 2004. I'm kind of sick of like opinion, just like the take machines. Yes. I have actually been chatting with some academic friends and some subject matter experts about could a section of our work be dedicated to ideas? Like, okay, we have this unhoused crisis. The folks who are in favor of sort of zero barrier access, folks like compassionate addiction treatment, what's the case for that? And there is, even among, you know, liberals and Democrats, I won't say leftists, but like, you know, kind of your sort of left of center liberals, you know, involuntary incarceration for people with drug is like, it's seeping its way into the left more and more. It used to only exclusively be on the right, and more because of what's happening downtown, you're hearing Democrats in Spokane talk about this. So why not have that conversation in, not in a way that's partisan and not in a way that's just like, oh, I think we should do this because whatever, but that's informed by expertise, reason, and it doesn't have to be right or wrong, but, And it certainly wouldn't be the editorial position of Range. It would be more of a convening of ideas to sort of just like get it out in the open and see like where we land as a community. I think that's a piece that's missing. Like everybody's running from opinion, you know, like the Inlander has columnists, but it's not particularly adversarial. The spokesman no longer has any columnists at all.
Or yeah,
do they get rid of Sulani?
Yeah,
they spiked all columnists.
Yeah.
Because I know I talked to Sean Vestal, and that sounds like that was part of the deal, was to get rid of both of them were going to go. But she continued on.
He left to take a job at Investigate West. Sulani Madsen and Keontha Duncan were their regular columnists.
Yeah.
And I think they're gone now or headed that way.
And I kind of like, I think like Sean was one of the rare columnists who would actually do reporting.
Yeah, he actually investigated.
Yeah, and I think that's having like a, you know, Lawrence, our bike ped columnist, like that's a different thing. That's not what I'm talking about here. It's like, I don't necessarily want David Brooks, you know, like what does David Brooks know that I don't know about homelessness? Right. And then the next week he's talking about foreign policy. It's like that kind of columnist opinion doesn't really appeal to me much. But the idea of like, okay, I'm a criminology professor at Eastern and I've been studying the impacts of, you know, cash bail for 2 decades. Here's what I think about what we're doing to our, you know, justice involved populations. Like that, I think could be a really powerful beginning of a conversation that then would hopefully take place in our entire community.
Yeah, that's more of an event type thing. Yeah,
I tend to agree with Luke about endorsements. My little campaign for the last 6 months has been to get all 4 people who live in my house to vote. we're all between the ages of 20 and 25, and I think we didn't quite make it there for the primary, but I think we will get there for the general. So I have 2 more people to drive to the polls after I get off of this phone call.
Yeah.
And I'll do little ballot explainers with them. And I never, even though I probably am much more informed than any of them, I spend 40 hours a week doing this. I never want to tell them how to vote, but I want to tell them how these policies will impact them, what decisions these people have made, and then let my roommates make their own decisions. And I think that's what I hope we can do at Range, is more robust election coverage. And we got a lot closer this year than we have in the past, I think, with like candidate write-ups and race coverage and breakdowns in a way that I hope was useful to people. And
I feel like people are getting more informed or have more of a curiosity about issues than ever before. And, you know, maybe that's just my peer group. I don't know, but it sure seems to be that way. Although what you just said, it doesn't sound like that's always the case. But anyway, well, why don't we let people know one more time how they can look at Range Media stuff and where they can find you and support you.
You can find us at rangemedia.co, .co.not.com. And we're also going to start having a radio show on KYRS Thursdays at 3 p.m.
And if you have a hot news tip, you can send it to me at erin@rangemedia.co.
Okay, so that would be really cool. And we do, yeah, all right.
And if you want to just heap praise or scorn on us, you can send an email to team, TEAM, @rangemedia.co, so the hate mail doesn't all go directly to Aaron.
Oh, yeah, that would be great. Thank you.
Yeah, unless it's about you, Erin? Would that
actually
be?
I prefer to be hate tweeted at, not hate. Yeah, so if it's you better. Hate me, just tell me on Twitter.
I enjoy that more too. All right, thanks everybody for listening. And
thank you so much. This is really fun.
This is great, Maeve.
Yeah, and you know, Amy Goodman tonight is going to be doing live campaign coverage, or election coverage rather, and then you're going to have Erin and Luke back on tonight too. Like at what time? 8 o'clock.
8 to 9 p.m. Doing some breakdowns after we get the first round of ballot drops in Spokane. So we'll tell you how things are looking tonight.
This is going to be local elections. It's some really interesting stuff going on. So, all right. Thanks everybody for listening, and we'll see you next week. You're listening to KYRS Medical Lake Spokane.
And now to Eden. Head now to Eden. No more trouble in my body or my mind. Gonna live like a king on whatever I find. Eat all the fruit and throw away the rind.
This paper from endorsing Harris, putting his financial principle above journalistic principles. The Post would have exploded, however, if he had dictated a Trump endorsement, so Boss Bezos tried the backdoor maneuver of no endorsement. This is Jim Hightower saying, the Post exploded anyway. Star reporters either resigned or howled at the crass sellout, while more than 250,000 readers canceled their subscriptions. As one reader posted about the billionaire's self-serving manipulation, if you don't have the guts to run a newspaper, don't buy one. The Hightower Radio Lowdown is made possible by you subscribers to Jim Hightower's Lowdown on Substack. Find us at jimhightower.substack.com.
You're listening to KYRS Medical Lake Spokane, 88.1 and 92.3 FM.
KYRS Medical Lake and K222BG Dartford, 88.1 FM and 92.3 FM, Thin Air Community Radio.
The following program was pre-recorded.
From New York, this is Democracy Now!
We're doing very well. I think we're leading by a lot. And if we can keep them, if we can keep that cheating down, because they're a bunch of cheats, if we can keep that cheating down, we're going to have a tremendous victory. I think it'll go down as one of the greatest victories of all time.
Election day has arrived, but the fight for the presidency may soon be entering a new phase as Donald Trump's laying the groundwork to challenge the results again if he loses to Kamala Harris. We'll speak with Mother Jones reporter Ari Berman, author of Minority Rule, The Right-Wing Attack on the Will of the People and the Fight to Resist It, and New York Times reporter Jim Rutenberg, who's examined how a Republican movement driven by disinformation has taken over election boards across the country, which could result in a vote certification crisis. Then to the misinformation web.
In our months-long research of misinformation in Spanish, we also came upon conspiracies about the FBI raid at Donald Trump's Mar-a-Lago estate, lies about Kamala Harris being a Marxist, theories about President Joe Biden's decision to not run for re-election. All of these narratives originated in English, only to be repurposed soon after in Spanish.
We'll speak to Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist Maria Nejosa of Latino USA about election misinformation and disinformation being directed at Spanish speakers in the United States. All that and more coming up.